Right, good morning everyone, and welcome to this technical committee meeting for the 20th of March. We have a number of staff present with us. Dr. Palmer, do you want to just introduce us? There's some existing staff and some new staff joined us for this technical committee meeting, so I think it'll be appropriate for Dr. Palmer to run along the line in the back of the room. Welcome to the staff, Dr. Palmer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, so Dr. Olson and Dr. Utendale are here for the Lake Snow paper they prepared. Dr. Payne and Dr. Hornblow for the CLUSA report. Andrew Welsh on the left, who's a spatial analyst in our hazards team. Vicky Schreffner, who's natural resources engineer in our natural hazards team. Andrew Chapman, environmental data officer. Sophie Butt, administration officer from the records team. And on the end, Elise Gore, who's a natural hazards analyst.
Great, thank you, Dr. Palmer. And again, very warm welcome. All right, there are no apologies. We'll confirm the agenda as circulated. Are there any conflicts of interest? It would appear not. There's no matters in public forum. We'll move straight to the minutes of the 8th of February meeting. Somebody prepared to move those as a true and accurate record. Councillor Bell, seconded Councillor Hope. I'll put it all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. All right, straight on to item one on our agenda, which is the Lake Snow Technical Workshop Proceedings and Research Priorities report, and you'll see appended to the agenda there is also the report from the workshop itself, as well as this report. Dr. Palmer, we've been looking forward to this for a while, and it pulls together the outcomes of that workshop and identifies for us some priorities, research priorities. Can you give us some context around it, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you've indicated, following the experts' workshop in December last year, the report on that workshop was refined by Dr. Ryder, and as the Chairman has said, that's attached to this covering paper. Experts identified a number of priority areas for the Lake Snow issue, and from that, a subset of matters for investigation by this council have been identified by staff, and they're summarised in section 5 of the report. That recommended work builds on the work to date, which is principally to do with the genetic analysis that we previously reported to Council. As noted in Section 2, there is a quite significant proposal for research around the Southern Great Lakes, which has been submitted to MB for funding. That's led by the University of Otago. There's been very close liaison with the university around that, and the recommended programme of work for this council fits neatly with that larger programme of work. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Palmer. Questions? Councillor Scott.
Yeah, well, firstly, a big thank you for the report, and I think also for the increased urgency in relation to this matter. The first thing I looked for in this report, I went through and thought there must be a silver bullet in there somewhere. If they can't think, well, I'll come up with something. But no. But unfortunately, no to both of those. And on page 10 it says, workshop participants discuss whether a known or practical solution exists for ridding the planktonic organism Lindavia intermedia that produces material responsible for Lake Snow from affected lakes. And the participants unanimously agreed that no such solution exists. So that was a bit of a, you know, disappointment. So we're now moving into the research, understanding the issue and so forth. And that's going to take some time. Is the situation going to get worse? Is the situation going to get worse as we go through this process? And are we optimistic that we're going to achieve something in relation to Lake Snow?
Dr. Palmer.
Well, we're optimistic. We've come up with a program of work, and we are hopeful that will lead to something, but it is very, very early days. As to could it get worse, I think the honest answer is yes, it could potentially get worse.
Mm-hmm.
But the intention is to move as quickly as is practicable to answer the questions that will enable the situation to be managed, if indeed it can be managed. And the programme of work sets that out.
Thank you.
Councillor Deeke, then Councillor
Lawson. Yeah, I had a similar question to Councillor Scott. I guess I addressed this through the chair to either Dr. Olson or Dr. Arden-Dowell. Is this in any way a seasonal phenomenon? Does the level of infestation fluctuate with surface water temperature? I ask the question because I am in the position of going to Queenstown a lot, and I talk to locals and I listen to what they're saying. I ask them questions. And I haven't heard any suggestion of anybody having a clock filter or washing machine or dishwasher going weedy or anything like that. What do we hear from QLDC? Are there intakes? And I remember clearly the technical manager for QLDC talking about how they were planning to filtrate their fresh water intakes. Is there still a problem there? How come we've heard absolutely nothing?
Recently.
Yeah, exactly.
Dr. Palmer, you want to answer that?
And maybe Dr. Olson can answer the question around the detail with the complaints coming out of Wanaka compared to complaints coming out of Queenstown, I think is the question.
Dr. Olson.
Certainly in Lake Wanaka, it is seasonal. Clodden talked to QLDC, particularly their chief water engineer, Ulrich Glasner.
Yeah.
Seems to be mostly the period of March. With Wakatipu, coming into Wakatipu in May last year, we saw quite high biomasses right through winter, so that was unexpected based on the experience from Wanaka. In terms of the lack of complaints from Queenstown, the primary concern has been large commercial properties and obviously very high water usage, so filtering a larger volume of water than your standard home. At this stage, we don't have the information to be able to say definitively, but it's possible that there's high biomasses of it in water, so that's why it's clogging. You're seeing more clogging of domestic bills, and things down it got to that same sort of level. The other point in Queenstown is also that it seems to be affecting one of their intakes more than the other. So I think it's what mile intake it is. Is it 2 mile?
Yeah.
1 mile intake has had it issues with whereas the Kelvin Heights intake doesn't seem to have the same issue.
Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. That helps my understanding.
Councillor Laws.
I've got four questions. First of all, if it's invasive, which is the first priority on the work list, what difference does that make?
Dr. Palmer.
Difference to what? What does it change?
To a practical policy. I mean, whether it's there or not, does it matter whether it's deemed invasive or not?
That will determine, understanding the driver will understand whether it's caused by other things such as nutrient enrichment as opposed to being introduced, and so that will influence the policy response. So that is why the genetics work is fundamental to understanding what course of action we might take to deal with whatever the driver happens to be.
Right, is current thinking that it's invasive?
That is the current thinking around the most likely cause is an invasion at the minute, but the genetics will help us know that with more certainty.
And we'll know that in June.
Okay. And it determines who is responsible for addressing the matter as well, Dr. Palmer. Is that correct?
Yes, it does. So it sets out what the appropriate policy direction would be and who would lead that and drive that.
There's a danger signal. So if it's invasive, does that mean it goes outside the responsibility of the Otago Regional Council and transfers to a central government agency?
Yes, it does potentially. It also means it's a much wider issue than Otago. It becomes a multiple region national issue in that case.
Which leads to the next question. Are Contact and Linz involved in any of this given their commercial interests in the lakes involved?
Can you clarify what you mean by involved?
Are they involved in any of the research or any of the funding? Do they provide any of the resources to assist you in this work program?
No, they haven't.
Okay. The funding, down it's got associated costs in the line, the appendix lines and things like that. There's a series of costs put against each of the work programs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that subject to the annual plan? Are those numbers included in the annual plan for 2017-18?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, yes. The estimates here for the work that ORC would do in 2017-18 are provided for fully in the draft annual plan.
Right. And finally, the priority lakes. You say there are four priority lakes. What are those priority lakes, please?
They will be Wakatipu, Wanaka, Hawea, and Dr. Olsen will have to remind me of the fourth one.
Lake Hayes.
Yeah, Lake Hayes.
Why is it Lake Dunstan there?
Dr. Palmer or Dr. Yudendar?
Good morning. I guess talking with the research experts, there's certainly an interest in the potential presence of lakes known as Lake Dunstan. But Lake Dunstan is seen really to, I guess, behave more as a run-of-the-river type lake. There hasn't been any reported cases of causing major problems with the fishermen trolling in Lake Dunstan, and the way that my understanding is the way that they fish in Lake Dunstan is a little bit different than the deep downriggers that are used in Lake Wanaka and Wakatipu. The Lindawi intermediate is present in Lake Dunstan, and it's thought to mainly be present because it's coming through from the outflows of Lake Wakatipu and Lake Wanaka. So certainly there is an interest in Lake Dunstan. We're aware of Lindawi intermediate, the Lake Snow Diatom being present there. But I guess the priority lakes are really about where it's been in the past and where it currently is at the moment, where it's actually causing issues with the presence of Lake Snow. And the interesting thing with Lake Hayes is that it has been there in the past and it's no longer there, so that hence it's one of the lakes within the Otago region that we're really keen to understand what's happening.
And that's my concern. You see, Lake Dunstan has been the poor cousin for those other lakes for a long time. So all the crap that comes into the other lakes, I can think of Lake Rosyfrin, for example, eventually ends up in Lake Dunstan because it's not dealt with in Wanaka, and then it becomes a major issue as it currently is in Lake Dunstan, Mr. Chairman. So I don't want Dunstan to be left out of, again, to be the poor cousin that's not regarded or monitored during this, and I wonder if four can be included to five. And the fact that it behaves differently, or is not an alpine lake, but in actual fact is part of a river system essentially, doesn't preclude it surely from having research done on it. In fact, the very fact that it's different, I would have thought, would have given it a research priority. And given that Lagrosyphon has gone from Wanaka to Dunstan, and now it's flowing freely, sadly, infesting its way down the Clutha to the Clyde Dam, wouldn't we, and given the acknowledgement that it's already in Lake Dunstan, that's Lake Snow, surely we should be treating Dunstan, or giving it the same research priority, if we now know that Lake Snow is in Lake Dunstan, and monitoring its development.
Well, I think that's where we need to rely on our science experts.
That's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
That's what governance does.
Because if you include Lake Dunstan, you would include Lake Roxburgh, which behaves in a very similar way.
Yeah.
But clearly, and I think we've seen this advice in the past, it's about retention times of the water in the lake. Is that the right word there? And
it doesn't go away.
No, it flows out to sea. So, Dr. Ute does.
I guess with the priority lakes, and it's not just priority lakes within Otago, it's also priority lakes within Byron Canterbury, also now Lake Waikaremoana in the North Island. And it's really about understanding the drivers of the formation of lakes and coming up with what might be management options. And those management options are ultimately relevant to all the lakes that are Lindawi Intermediate to be present in. So we've also got it in Moat Lake, alongside Lake Wakatipu. I guess for us, we would be taking the advice from the scientific expert panel as to what the work program should look like and where that should be focused. And what we've, I guess, outlined within the paper is the initial stages in really improving, like increasing our understanding of Lindari Intermediate and Lake Stone Formation, both in New Zealand and internationally, and starting on a work program that will evolve over time. And certainly, Lake Dunstan should be seen as a priority for understanding the drivers of Lake Stone in that context, and would be included. But I guess that the program overall is really about managing lake snow throughout all of New Zealand.
Okay, thank you.
Listen, I'm not happy. I just flagged that straight away, Mr. Chairman, and I want to say it's in a different environment in Lake Dunstan than it would be in the other alpine lakes. Hayes, I suppose, would be a bit different again. But why you wouldn't research it in a different environment, like Lake Murray, Waikaremoana is a different lake again than Wanaka or Wakatipu. I just want to have it recorded that I do want Lake Dunstan researched and given priority on that research as well, because it will behave differently there than it will behave in the alpine lakes. And that's the reason that I think it should be a priority, and given that it's one of our major southern recreational lakes within our region. So can I ask Mr. McLean, am I asking the right person, to review that priority, given their argument?
No, it's not Dr. McLean.
Dr. Palmer.
But again, I think we're relying on the expert panel, and they've spent a day on workshop on this and produced these results. So yeah, I'm comfortable with that. But Dr. Palmer, anything you want to add there?
No, just to reinforce what Dr. Udendale said, that the research will be applicable to all lakes, regardless of the particular lake. If you look at the research questions, that are the priority. And the focus has been on places where the effects are greatest.
Yeah.
All right. Councillor Deacon and then Councillor Kipton.
The report, which was a good read, makes three or four kind of en passant references to Didymo, and wonders whether there's a ecological relationship. I think that we're at risk here of focusing so much on the so-called lake snow that we lose our what should be a intense focus on Didymo, which I would argue is a far more widespread infestation and one that is arguably much more of a nuisance than lake snow. We're absolutely right to worry about our western lakes, and I agree with Councillor Laws about Lake Dunstan. It does tend to be regarded as a bit of a poor relation simply because it's a hydro lake. But I would hope that this technical panel and their ongoing work will keep on a bit of focus on Didymo, and that we as a council will take any opportunity that comes along to support, to maybe even fund potential solutions to the Didymo infestation. I think I've said before at this table that some very promising research was begun at both Otago University and the Cawthron Institute into the management, control and eradication of Didymo. I don't know where that... I understand the research has stopped for funding reasons, but I hope that we will not drop that ball with our concentration on so-called lake snow. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Kemper?
just on this question of what lakes we're looking at, I do think we have to rely on the expert opinion. And there was an important point made earlier about the formation of lake snow. We're looking at the highest point in those catchments where it exists. That sounds, I'm no scientist, but that sounds quite a, that's where it's doing probably. Water retention times and Lake Dunstan are a matter of days because it is still a, it's largely a fat flowing river system at that point. And so my common sense says to me, start off where we think it's being formed. And if we, and what's really important is when we maintain some focus, because I'm sure everybody could put their hand up for their favourite lake. So I would rely entirely on the advice that we've been given today.
Thank you. The other point I'd like to just highlight is a paragraph just above the recommendations, where the is relevant to all alpine lakes, and consideration should be given to establishing a governance group comprising members of three regional councils, Canterbury, Otago and Southlands, so to coordinate the management response and engagement with central government on this issue. That's a matter that Mr. Bodeker and I will raise with our colleagues in those other councils, and because I think there's some wider issues here, such as biosecurity issues and how we're going to manage those longer term without you know, ignoring Didymoe and the likes, but it's what's the next one on the block, where is it coming from, how are we going to stop it essentially. So it's just that paragraph's just there to raise the topic, if you like, and we'll be following it up, and are there some common issues here that we should all be looking at on the what I refer to as the Great Southern Lakes, what I'm referring to, and from Pukaki down, essentially. All right, recommendations are there. Councillor Robertson, did you have a question?
Oh, that's fine, actually.
Colleen?
It's quite similar to what you have said, so that's probably fine. Yeah.
Thank you. Recommendations that the outcomes of the expert workshop convened by ORC in December are noted, and the inclusion of the program of further research described in this report in the draft annual, the draft 2017-2018 annual plan is endorsed. I'm happy to move that. Is there a seconder?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Councillor Kempton. No further discussion, I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. On to item two, morphology of the Clutha River Matau between Roxburgh and the Pacific Ocean. This is an update on our last report, which was 2008 from memory. Dr. Palmer, am I right there?
Yeah.
Yep. And it's an annual plan target, as you can see. The attached report has some very good graphics and lots of data in it. And so, Dr. Palmer, what were the outcomes of this, and what does it mean for, are there any management decisions that need to flow on from this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is part of a broader state of the environment monitoring and reporting, and it really informs other decision-making processes like scheme management and gravel extraction. I don't think there are any strong conclusions to draw from it. It has noted some issues around just monitoring scheme works down near Balclutha, given these very localised changes that are occurring there, but apart from that, it's reasonably routine, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Open the report up for questions. Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, thank you. Just briefly, there was talk about gravel extraction in the vicinity of Balclutha. Mm. I'm just kind of keen to know what the history over the last few decades of gravel extraction has been there. Has it been reducing significantly over time, or is it continuing at about the same level?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman, it has been reducing in recognition that the supply was cut off some time ago.
Yes.
And gravel extraction from a scheme management point of view is something that we look at very closely.
Yes.
And that gave rise to the monitoring condition that's referred to in this report and continued monitoring and see what happens there.
Okay, so over time we can expect gravel extraction to probably drift right off?
I think gravel extraction has a role to play in terms of scheme management. I wouldn't say never. I would just say use it tactically.
Yep. Thank you.
Councillor Deacon.
I thought this report would at least make reference to the coastline into which this river flows, because we've had several reports in recent years under the heading of hazards about the retreat of the coastline from Carpy Point through to wherever, Brighton, St Clair. And I wonder whether the authors of this report can comment on the relationship between the balance between aggradation and degradation in the river and the so-called retreat of this coastline. We have seen maps which were alarming, putting our own assets at risk on the Clutha Delta. I thought there'd be a reference in this to the relationship between the behaviour of the river and its morphology and the state of that coastline.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So this report deals with the within river changes.
It certainly does.
And so the effects of the river on the coast are handled in the coastal report that was considered by committee in 2014. That was the one that looked at changes in coastal morphology between Nugget Point and Crystals Beach.
Yep.
Now, it becomes quite hard to relate sediment supply cutoff by the dams and other historical activities to changes we see in the coastline. That matter was covered in detail by coastal experts at the Contact Energy consent hearings. It was inconclusive amongst the coastal experts as that relationship between the river and what we see on the coast, and that led to a condition on Contact Energy that involves us with a monitoring program, which we report in that report like the 2014 one. So at the moment, it's really a matter of just monitoring the position of the coastline and the offshore sand wedge, without going so far as to make direct connections between quantities of sediment that are no longer reaching the coast and changes. That's just not practical, because the experts can't agree on the complex relationship between those processes.
Yes, I totally accept what you're saying, but it would seem to me there'd be a pretty close relationship. But if this river is aggrading, as this report indicates, and there's not enough, as Councillor Kempton puts it, gravel extraction going on, then that's going to have a pretty well, I won't go on, because you've made the point that it's very difficult to establish the relationship. But I'd like to see that. If we're monitoring the coastline and we're monitoring the river, I think we need to interlink the two. That's what I'm saying.
Councillor Scott, you do
that. Yeah, two questions. Firstly, thank you very much, you know, for this report. Often it's easy to take these reports for granted, but there's just so much work that goes into it, and it sets the scene for a lot of, you know, future management work. My first question, I remember sitting in the, I was saying to you before, Councillor Woodhead, sitting in the back of the Balclutha Town Hall, and a couple of the, some of the dairy farmers were complaining about the gravel in the Clutha, and following on from Councillor Kempton, what it says here on page 15, two gravel bars in the Clutha adjacent to Balclutha have caused concern some landowners due to their apparent growth and migration downstream into the zone where the river bisects into the Kohanga Matau branches. So my question there is, in relation, if it has aggregated, you know, is that going to exacerbate any flooding risk? That's my question. And if the answer is yes, what can or should we be doing about it? That's my first question. And the second question that I flicked up was in relation to, was on page 3, where it says that NIWA state that since the building of the Clyde and the Roxburgh dams, the potential yield of the sand and gravel from the Clutha Matau to the coast was reduced by 95%. And Councillor Deek has been talking about 95%. That, and then it says that Contact Energy operates a drawdown program to flush sediment from the two dams and transport the material downstream. So I was just a little bit unsure at the end of the day how much is actually retained, you know, because of that flushing. You know, is it the 95% or is it, what is it?
Not Palmer.
Okay, so the answer to the first question is no, we have no immediate concerns around flood risk, but we will continue to monitor. And if we feel that removing gravel is necessary from flood management point of view, then we will do that, either ourselves or through an arrangement with a commercial operator. So it's a matter of continue to monitor that.
Has the flooding risk increased?
No, not materially. No. No. And I think one of the problems with beaches is that people tend to observe them when the river flows are low, and so it's not that the bed's gone up, it's just that the water has gone, it's shallow at the time. So it, exaggerates that effect, even though there's no actual change. That's one of the sort of visual things.
So we've done our homework and we're comfortable.
Yes. The answer to the second question is that yes, the dams trap most of the sediment, which principally arises from the shot over catchment. In terms of flushing, there is no condition on contact to flush, but flushing is a method they use to achieve sediment management. They're required to have a sediment management plan, and they use flushing. The flushing is not intended to bypass sediment from upstream the dam to the river and the coast. The flushing is intended to rework the sediment deposited at the head of Lake Roxburgh and move it down within the lake, because where it settles at the upstream end of the lake basically increases the flood hazard for Alexandra. So the flushing is intended to just to move it, sediment down within the reservoir so it's further away from Alexandra and reduces the Alexandra flood risk. It's not intended to send it to the coast. Some of it will get to the coast, but very, very little.
So 95% is retained?
I'm not sure of the exact number, but it's a big number like that, yes.
And so, as a matter of interest, what's the longevity of Lake Roxburgh? Like, has anybody worked out that in next year's time should we all fill up?
Yes, that's been worked out, and that's part of the sediment plan, which puts a number on, the date.
Does anyone know what that is?
Not at the top of my head, but there is some understanding of the dates by which Lakes Roxburgh and, of course, now Dunstan become full of sediment. Unless you do something about that.
Such as?
I suppose you could. there are probably some, you know, there will be things that could be done, but whether they are practical, achievable, is another discussion. But that analysis has certainly been done by the dam owners.
As part of the consenting process.
As part of consenting, yes.
Lengthy discussion on that, and it essentially becomes run of the river, which they do now.
Yeah. Thank you.
Dr. Palmer, just a little further on that, there's a bit of erosion around where the river bifurcates at Clutha. And historically, I think before 2008, we'd seen quite a bit of gravel extraction, and actually the bed in place is degrading, mm-hmm. and there was some risks around scheme infrastructure as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And so just, you know, are we comfortable, there's 80 metres has been identified at one point where it's eroded. Beside the Clutha township, are we comfortable with the split in the river flow currently, and I know that wasn't part of this study, between the Marau and the Kauau branches, because the impacts there are significant during flood time?
Yes, through Mr. Chairman, you're quite right. The concern around the gravel build-up was whether the flow split as designed would still occur in the two branches, and my understanding is the modelling work we've done shows it's about the same as it was supposed to. It is supposed to be. There's no concern at the minute, but it's certainly something we'll keep an eye on.
Right.
The flow split.
Thank you. It's certainly been something that the community has been. Any further questions? All right. The recommendation is that the report is received and noted. I'm happy to move that. Seconded, Councillor Brown. No further discussion. I'll put it all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 3 is a director's report on progress. Dr. Palmer.
Mr. Chairman, I'll take that as read. I've taken the opportunity to update you on some of the technical things that are happening in respect of South Dunedin and adaptation to climate change. But happy to take questions.
Councillor Laws.
Some pretty obvious questions in the wake of the last week. Folk in Dunedin will have been alarmed by the newspaper headlines of the last 3 or 4 days connected with the Professor Flynn comments and then the response of the Mayor, David Cull, to that, who made some suggestion about refugee camps. I just want to clarify, because it is the Otago Regional Council responsibility, partial responsibility into the South Dunedin area, that there has been if there's been any work done or is to be done on the kind of doomsday scenarios that are being suggested. Now, remember, I'm a new councillor. I was aware prior to the election that there was some work done on South Dunedin on groundwater, and that was duly reported, I think, at the time. But is there anything in the work that the Otago Regional Council is doing, Dr. Palmer, that gives the people of South Dunedin some solace that they're not living in a potential swamp?
Some of them might be living in the swamp now. Dr. Palmer.
Okay, through Mr. Chairman. Okay, so in terms of planning for sea level rise, the proposed regional policy statement adopts a sea level rise figure of 1 metre by 2115. So that's our planning.
1 metre by 2115,
did you say? Yes, so 100 years. Okay, right. So that's a very directive planning figure. Having said that, the approach that should be taken should be one of adaption to new information into what actually happens into the future. One of the adaptation methods suggested has been to control the groundwater at present levels or some other level, and that has led to the international review I've referred to in my report, which is underway at the moment, that's looking at case studies of where groundwater control has been used successfully or maybe unsuccessfully elsewhere, and what can we learn from that, and then we can make some decisions about whether such things might be appropriate for further consideration in South Dunedin. So that's a way of looking at what can we do to suppress groundwater levels. I've also made reference there to the New Zealand Sea Rise Program. That program, if it proceeds, would provide location-specific relative sea level change information. So we would have information quite specific to Otago and South Dunedin in particular. And that will give us much more reliable estimates of the difference between sea level and ground level, because there's two things potentially going on, sea rising and maybe the ground is settling. So that program will improve those estimates. And we are supporting that. So I think I've answered the question.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking is, I know that there's a great deal of unease, I'm sure my Dunedin colleagues would know even better than I, about some of the discussion that's been had in the last week, month, so. And it's seriously affecting the commercial viability of, well, you know, the real wealth of people in South Dunedin and their sense of their sense of community and their sense of well-being. When do we anticipate having the kind of research that you've got here being made publicly available to perhaps calm some of those concerns or at least answer some of those anxieties, Gavin?
So the international review will be completed around June, so that will come back to this committee. The intention is to share that with the community, have a discussion. Mrs. Rowe's been working on a community engagement program. There's also already been significant engagement with the community last year on what we already know and the work that we're doing, so that will be shared with the community around the middle of the year. The New Zealand Sea Rise Program is a little longer. That's a multiple year thing. We will know later in the year as to whether that program will proceed. It's likely to be several years before we get the improved estimates, but the work would commence. As I said, in the meantime, we do have the RPS, Regional Policy Statement figure, that we're working to. So, we're working jointly with Dunedin City Council on technical work and community engagement. So a key milestone is really around the middle of the year. We've got a number of things coming together.
Yeah. So at the moment, though, there's nothing in you to confirm. Well, there's nothing in the Otago Regional Council research that's currently being completed or its future planning that would confirm the alarmist views of Professor Flynn.
Well, that's part of a much larger set of information. And the regional policy statement is, you know, going through appeals at the minute, and that aspect is not being appealed as I understand it. So there's real certainty there in terms of what the planning assumption will be in terms of sea level rise. And then our immediate attention is on things like groundwater control. What can we learn from overseas and that's happening right now?
And how can we mitigate any deleterious consequences?
Correct, that's yes. Right. So definitely looking at protection options. Are they feasible? Would they work?
Thank you. Councillor Scott and Councillor Rollinson.
Yeah, just a couple of points. Dr. Palmer, I mean, there may be some real certainty in terms of what, you know, what our benchmark is in terms of 1 metre sea level rise over the next year, but certainly, you know, in terms of the anxiety about what it really will be, time will tell. You know, Flynn, I've got his book at home, you know, he talks about some worse scenarios and so forth, but at the end of the day, what will be will be, and it's all sort of information. The word, Councillor Lewis used the word anxiety. I don't think anxiety is ever going to go away on this particular matter, in terms of, like, even if you build a wall, you know, there's always going to be some anxiety. Jeepers, I hope it works, you know, because the sea level rise is not going away. The only argument is the speed of that rise, and another argument is you know, how can we live with that situation? So the anxiety is going to be here for a while, and I'd just like to say that I think what the DCC and the ORC are doing is really a mature response. They're actually doing their homework in terms of, you know, what can we do from a strategic perspective in relation to groundwater rise, and so that may put to bed, you know, different ideas or be the foundation for different ideas. So come June or so forth, we'll systematically approach this matter.
Councillor Rawson?
Yeah, don't want to go over old territory, that's for sure. This is just part of a wide program that we've had in place, investigating hazard in that area for many years. So we've got a lot of reports already, Councillor Laws, looking at projected sea level, where it would occur, what the hazard risk is. And just remind people as well that sea level rise is just one of the hazards in anywhere, I suppose. There's a number that come together and the equation for how serious overall the risk is needs to take them all into account. So building on essentially estuarine sediments has risk for liquefaction. Exactly, risks towards liquefaction. Also, housing stock, risks, hazards associated with that, coastal erosion, blah, 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 and it all gets worked out, and this is just part of the picture. We already have a reasonably good idea of what the risk is, as Mr. Palmer said, and so far we've managed to project that within 30 years there would be ponding in certain places in South Dunedin all the time, and that figure may change as we refine that with time.
Thank you. Councillor Noon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through you, a question for Dr. Palmer. Our current monitoring of sea level rise, we've got some hard actual data, is that correct?
That's correct. If you, Mr. Chairman, we've been monitoring sea level at Green Island since 2002. And we've recently, in the last 6 months, had the survey school install a GPS device that measures the level of the land so that we can get an accurate measurement of the difference between land level and sea level. And that's continuous.
Okay. And have we got any trends or actual trends from that 2002 to 2017 data that is public information at this point in time?
Yes, it's obviously a very short data set, but the trends are consistent with longer data sets, including one in Otago Harbour itself, and that's probably the better one in terms of looking at longer term trends, and those are consistent with other places around New Zealand that also have multi-decade sea level measurements. They're all showing the same thing.
And the figure of 1.3 mil that's often used in this discussion, is that an actual figure that the community can rely on at this point in time? And accepting that when you talk about the RPS, they are estimates and assumptions, but just talking about actual data, that 1.3 per annum sea level rise is an actual figure that the ORC have come to. to a conclusion as what's actually happening at this point in time?
Yes, I'd need to check the number itself, because it's different numbers depending on which gauge you're looking at. But certainly that's all been published. It can be relied upon. There are some caveats around data quality and the precision, but that's public information that was shared with the community late last year in the 17 or 18 community sessions we had in South Dunedin, and it's been published through this committee in our various technical reports. It can be relied upon.
Thank you.
Any further questions? All right, I just note in item 3 in the director's report, the ongoing work in the river management plan area, and end of March meetings coming up, community in the Shag and Wanaka Rua catchments, councillor.
Yeah, I was just going to ask the question, have those dates been set yet? Because we're almost at the end of March.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. When I checked yesterday, I don't think a date had been set, and there might be a little bit of movement to ensure there's a reasonable notice period for everybody involved.
Yes, April would suit me better.
Okay. Sounds like a take for me.
March. That was almost shot. All right. No further questions. The recommendation is that the report's noted. I'll have you move that. Second to Councillor Noon. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. I declare the technical committee closed, and we will move on to policy.
All right.